Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It is a newer type of situation, and we're enjoying it. Three stories, three guests, three quick hits right here on 670 The Store. Score! Speaking of The Store, that's why I'm thinking of The Store. We once sent Alec Campbell as an intern to go get a pair of glasses for Dan McNeil, and he said, "And something manly!" And he meant the style of glasses. Alec thought he just wanted something manly, so he brought back a six-pack of Heineken. That's a true story.
And some porn on VHS.
What would have been, like a copy of Maxim and a drill? He brought back a six-pack of Heineken. Alec Campbell's a brilliant man. We call him Manly Stuff, and now he works in Carolina. We go to Carolina and talk to our guy, Alec Campbell, from 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh. Alec, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm good, man. I was covering my ass, all right? I didn't know what to do.
A phenomenal intern move. I thought, like, one of the most brilliant intern moves of all time. Why do the Carolina Panthers fire the GM, Dave Gettleman, when you're this close to training camp? What the hell?
Dude, nobody knows. That's the short answer. And the reason we don't know is because we haven't heard anything from the owner, Jerry Richardson. So all we're left to do at this point is try to put the pieces together. And what we've come up with is that basically there is a lack of interpersonal skills that Dave Gettleman lacked. He did not have them. He is a scout by nature. He is not a manager by nature. So we have Greg Olsen and Thomas Davis who are looking for new contracts right now. And they are fan favorites, and they are organizational favorites. And Jerry Richardson does not want to happen what happens to other franchise favorites like Steve Smith, like D'Angelo Williams, like Jordan Gross. And then to top it off, last year, what happened with Josh Norman. So the speculation is that because Gettleman was in no hurry to provide new contracts for Thomas Davis and Greg Olsen, that something happened in the last day and a half. We don't really know. Gettleman was on vacation, as much of the Panthers front office staff is right now. So it seems like there was some kind of big incident that occurred that forced his hand, because it's not like we didn't know that Gettleman came in and axed a bunch of franchise players in the past. So right now we're all kind of waiting for more information, but all that we can really say is that Gettleman didn't want to give contract extensions to Thomas Davis and Greg Olsen, or at least he wasn't in a hurry to do so. And Jerry Richardson, the owner of the Panthers, did not want an unceremonious departure from both of those two, as other past franchise players have gone.
You really think it was one particular incident, or maybe could it have been the owner just finally deciding in a moment when no one was around, I just can't do this anymore?
Well, I mean, that's certainly on the table. Again, we can't really say for sure, except that, I mean, why would you go through basically the entire off season with your GM, the draft, free agency, all those things, when you've known that this is the guy that Dave Gettleman is? I mean, all these things have happened years ago. Steve Smith, this was 3-4 years ago when he was released. D'Angelo Williams, same situation. So perhaps it was something that was building with Jerry Richardson, but I mean, it doesn't make much sense when you're a week away from training camp.
It doesn't. Alec, thank you so much, man. Great stuff. Great to talk to you. Let's go to cover two. This is Chelsea Janes of the Washington Post, who covers the Nationals. Washington Nationals, we've talked with her before, always good. Chelsea, the trade has been made, Sean Doolittle and Ryan Madsen. Is that enough, or are the Nats still looking around?
I think everyone around the Nats would tell you that it's something, but they'd love to have a little bit more. I think they'll continue to poke around for sure. The answer I got when I asked that question, like, are you done, was never. So I think they'll be hunting. I think they sense they've got a really good team, and maybe one more guy could make a huge difference. But the two guys they got are probably going to make a pretty massive difference too.
Does Mike Rizzo have any money to play with if he wanted to do something big?
I'm surprised they added as much as they did, to be honest with you, and Doolittle and Madsen, those weren't cheap guys. I really don't have a good sense of whether that's going to be it, or whether everyone's saying, you know what, let's just kind of go for it. We'll take on as much money as we need to. I know David Robertson's the name that, you know, might be most relevant out there. That seems like a lot of money, but I'm not totally sure. I think at this point they've signaled they're in it to kind of go for it, you know, this year in a way they haven't before. So that might mean spending more money than they ever have.
David Robertson is indeed the relevant name that comes up out here all the time. Our sense was that Mike Rizzo kind of got fleeced in the Adam Eaton trade, and that's part of why he doesn't want to deal with Rick Hahn anymore. Is there any truth to that?
I don't think so at all, to be honest with you. I don't think he'd agree with you on that trade. For okay. sure. You know, he's a pretty stubborn guy. That's not to say that people in round D.C. don't agree with you. I think, you know, from what we've heard, he had a deal in place. Robertson, and it got nixed by ownership, and I think, you know, back in the winter, if I remember correctly, and, you know, it just never got any farther than that again. And I think he would happily take a closer if it came at the right price, and that's the guy who fits that mold. But yeah, you know, maybe he did get fleeced, but that's not really something I don't think he's ever let cross his mind, and I doubt would kind of play into things.
Well, one more for you, Chelsea. This seems like kind of a perfect team, other than that one item. Like, They're the best in the National League offensively at everything. Steven Strasburg is healthy and dominating. Max Scherzer's better than Clayton Kershaw this year. I mean, is there any other issue with this team?
Just health. I mean, they've really gotten hit hard recently, but you expect, you know, Trey Turner and guys like that to come back. And if they do, and if Madsen and Doolittle help, I think I agree. I think this is the best team they've ever had, and I think that's going to inform their decisions at the deadline. But they're pretty fun to watch, and that bullpen sucked a lot of energy. So to kind of have that shored up will make a massive difference, I think.
Chelsea, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. Let's go to cover three. Los Angeles, the destination, and our guest is suddenly unavailable. But let's talk about it, you and I, Barry, and that is Lonzo Ball. A couple issues regarding Lonzo Ball in Los Angeles, and actually it was Vegas. He wins the Summer League MVP. He didn't play last night, I think, in their championship game, but he did win the Summer League MVP. I saw that the last three Summer League MVPs were a big pile of unimpressive names, like Glenn Rice Jr., Kyle Anderson, and Tyus Jones. Those are your last three Summer League MVPs, so we know what that is. But your last three rookies to win Summer League MVP are Damian Lillard, John Wall, and Blake Griffin. So a lot of people writing to dismiss this and what Lonzo Ball has done, regardless of, you know, the achievement. If you watch him, the passing is just gorgeous. And the questions have been the offense. They will still be the offense, still be that awkward shot. But the dude can pass. And it didn't take long for him to get comfortable with some brand new teammates.
Yeah, I'm just really happy for the kid. I like him a lot. I love his game. I thought he was going to be the best player in the NCAA tournament last year. They ran into some trouble. I'm just excited that he's able to play, that he's able to shake his dad, that the Lakers did what they were supposed to do, and they weren't thrown off by the whole thing. Because I honestly don't understand a father who puts his kid in that position. I just don't understand why you would want to put more pressure on a kid who's already had pressure on him since the time he was probably 10 years old to be the very best at what he was. The cool thing is it just doesn't seem to bother him. He doesn't seem affected by it. He's an awfully tough kid. And I'm really looking forward to his NBA career.
I was really disappointed in him in the tournament, specifically the game against Kentucky and De'Aaron Fox. I was like, wow. He didn't even seem like he wanted the ball. He's the best player on that team.
I don't know what was going on there.
Right. That was a really bad showing. And then he announced he was leaving immediately thereafter.
It might have been the time that it finally did get to him. Uh-huh. Because, I mean, his dad wouldn't shut up for 5 minutes at that point.
And now here he is. So do you realize what the whole sneaker gambit was about? He finally admitted to it the other day. It got a lot of coverage. Hey, he's not in Big Baller Brand. He's in Kobe's purple sneakers, and then he's wearing the James Harden Adidas sneakers. Then what else? He wore Reeboks one night, too.
Didn't he wear Jordans, too, or no?
Those were the Kobe ones, right? I forget, but there definitely was Nike, Reebok, and Adidas all represented, and you had SportsCenter and other places showing you his stats in each shoe brand, and then he admits that he's looking for a big shoe deal with one of those companies. Or he's just trying to build buzz with all of the companies. So, all right, so that's a much more subtle business first ploy than everything his dad has been doing.
That's just good business. That's all that is. That's good marketing. That's good business. No issue with that whatsoever.
Okay, but you don't look at that and say, oh, he's just like his jackass dad, and throw him on that pile. Oh, he's business first, just like his jackass dad.
No, I think it's his responsibility to absolutely capitalize on every dollar he can possibly get. He should.
And it's much more subtle and much more well done.
And it's his money. It's his shoe. It's his face. It's his body. He should be able to do whatever he wants.
And if it means he says F you to his dad's
Which
own sneaker
much,
idea.
Much better.
Talk about ingratiating yourself into a league that's ready to hate you for the reasons that you said.
That's just so unfortunate. Why do you put somebody in that position? I hate that.
Joel Embiid and LeVar going back and forth. His dad insulting LeBron, insulting all these people on his way in.
Insulting everybody. Who didn't he insult?
Mm-hmm. If he goes against dad, if it's like rebellion against dad and goes with his own shoe plan and just kind of does it quietly, he'll make a lot of those people who are giving him a hard time, we'll get him on his side, won't he?
Unless we were all just being played from the start. Unless this was all part of the look on your face. Sometimes the look, usually that's the look you give me. The just total disgust, total disappointment, total fatigue. That's usually the Rosner look that I get. This time, it's for the dad.
It's for the dad. And as we finish the three technique, little bit less. Thank you.
The best part about that is the guy says, oh, yeah, okay, thanks, Les. When he didn't answer the call.
My favorite is the Tommy Kelly reference. I think that's how we realized that it was the Wikipedia entry that he was botching as he read it live on air.
No, I think it was when he was like, okay, there's 11 players and the goal is to get a first down.
I thought it was Pro Football Focus, because if you look at the where he starts reading the history of football, I thought that was from Pro Football Focus.
Oh, I thought it was Wiki, because Wiki had Tommy Kelly as an
find
example.
It. You can find verbatim what he's reading.
But verbatim, but he reads a half a paragraph here and then goes to another half a paragraph and asks, does that answer your question? Oh, yeah, sure does. Thank you. All right, that is the three technique. It's 670 The Score. It's Spiegs and Rosner here with you. This segment is brought to you by USA Network. Tonight, Ryan Felipe returns as Bob Lee Swagger in the USA hit original drama Shooter. The new season begins tonight at 9, right after SmackDown, live on USA Network. Barry, you're going to educate me about a revolution, an equipment revolution, which is tied to a technique revolution in a very relevant sport this week. You got me thinking about it. I want to hear more about it. We'll do it next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is 670 The Score. Kendall Gill was upset when they had a big old draft for the Big Three, Ice Cube's 3-on-3 league, and all the guys that got drafted did not include Kendall Gill. And Kendall was upset. Because he's like, man, I'm playing the game out here. And he went on a tweet storm about it. Because a bunch of guys took friends, took their pals who were in crappy shape and haven't played in years. And Kendall's like, I'm ready to go.
He's in fighting shape.
Yes, he is. He's in incredible, incredible shape. And now he's been added. He's on a team. Somebody got hurt because that's what happens in this league, in something that we all should have seen coming.
A bunch of old guys playing basketball. Yeah, there's going to be some injuries.
Yeah, and Kendall Gill's going to be on this show in 35 minutes. Looking forward to that. I always like talking to Kendall, and we've been wanting to talk to him since he got snubbed by the Big Three, and now he's in, and that thing is happening this Saturday at the UIC Pavilion.
I bet you he plays well.
I bet you he does. He might end up being MVP of the Big Three. But anyway, so that's at 11 o'clock and Joe Madden at noon. But it's British Open week, and you were talking to me about one golfer whose story a lot of people might not know.
Yeah, I don't he won Sunday at the John Deere, which is a great jumping off point for so many young players. He is the 10th first-time winner this year. He's 23 years old. Bryson DeChambeau.
Wow, 10th first-time winner.
Yeah.
Because I do get the sense there's a ton of new guys.
There's never been anything like this.
That's what it feels like.
You can make a case for 70 guys every week, and I mean that literally. I'm not saying he's got an outside shot. I'm saying there's 70 guys who could win every week, and there's probably 30 I could make a really good case for this week. We'll get into the British Open in a couple minutes, but this particular guy, Bryson DeChambeau, he was the USAM winner in 2015, also won the NCAA championship in 2015.
So top amateur in the U.S. And
so basically top amateur in the world, essentially, at that point.
Okay.
And he has done this in a very different way. He was a physics major at SMU, and every iron and wedge in his bag is cut to the same length, every single club. Except for his fairway medals and his driver.
Now this is different. Tell people how it usually is, just in case there's some non-golfers.
Well, the length of every club from 60 degree wedge all the way up to your 2 iron is going to be a different length. The longer you hit it, the longer the club. Every one of his clubs are exactly the same length in terms of his wedges and his irons. They are all 7 iron length. Imagine holding your 7 iron. Every club is that length, 37.5 inches. Every lie and bounce, identical. He does not, with an upright lie, he does not alter his swing plane during his swing ever. He doesn't use his wrists. So every swing is exactly the same. The only thing that's different is the loft of the club, and that determines your distance. So basically, if he's not hitting a fairway medal or a driver, every swing is precisely the same.
So Let me get a couple things. Does he use, obviously, the clubs are made to manage your distance, like, you know, the different weights and the different lofts of the club.
Yeah,
the more
the loft, the shorter the club, the higher it goes.
But in his case, because every club is the same, does he have them altered then in terms of the loft or
yes.
the weight? Altered differently?
Just the loft. The length is identical. Every club is identical. So he's holding every club exactly the same, swinging every club exactly the same, including out of the bunkers. He's hit. It's the same swing out of the bunker with the same length club as he hits a 2 iron.
Now this is obviously that simplifies his preparation and his practice dramatically.
It simplifies everything.
Right.
And not only is he winning with it, and again, keep in mind.
Is he winning with it?
Well, he won this week. He's a winner on the PGA Tour. You know how hard it is to win on the PGA Tour?
And he was the best amateur.
Most guys don't win in a given year, okay? Most guys don't win a single tournament in a given year. He's now a winner on the PGA Tour. His life has changed forever. And this is all based on analytics. It's based on science.
You said he's a physics major.
He was a physics major, and he was looking for a simpler way. Now, I want to read this quote
to you. This is really interesting.
And now, he has been brutalized by the media, the fans.
How about by old-school players or just players in general?
I wrote about him today, by the way. You can find this at dailyherald.com or on my Twitter feed or Facebook page. He's been crushed by the old-timers, by guys like Brandel Chambly on the Golf Channel, by fans. One fan yelled at him this weekend, hey, throw those away, go get your old clubs. He has done this. He's been called a mad scientist. He has done this in the face of an enormous amount of criticism, and yet he says, I just want to make it easier for everybody. I want it to be easier for amateurs. There's an easier way out there, and people just haven't figured it out. People may think my golf swing is really weird and funky, but I think it's one of the most consistent swings out there. If you look in slow motion, there are not many moving parts. It's pretty consistent. But one of my biggest goals is to help grow the game, and I think this could help a lot of people. And he's right. Your average amateur searches his whole or her whole life looking for something repeatable.
Right. And it's
something
not,
you can do.
And you don't have time or the access to.
You got to play every day. You have to play every single day, and nobody can do that.
Hmm.
Here's a repeatable swing. He said it's the most complex game there is. And the more you understand the variables, the more consistent you can become. The closest anybody ever came was Tiger. Tiger understood every wedge into every flag with a certain spin and a certain trajectory. I'm doing the same thing, just in a different way. I'm doing it with a method, with a scientific research kind of way. It's amazing to watch. I think it's staggering that something like this could be put in the hands of every amateur out there, making it easier for them to play the game. And I think it's staggering that a guy in the face of so much criticism is now having success at the PGA Tour level, and I think it's fascinating.
It's really interesting. Go to Barry Rosner's column at the Daily Herald, dailyherald.com, for more. I have a question for you on this after the update.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I did not know about this stuff, and I appreciate learning. Bryson DeChambeau is the golfer who used Cobra brand irons, which are made all at the single length, as Barry Rosner just discussed with you. It's Spiegel and Parkins here on The Score. Speaks with Barry Rosner, sitting in for Danny. And when he proclaimed the day the game has changed, when he won his first pro event on the web.com tour last year, he said that I knew I was carrying the torch of one-length clubs, but it was going to prove itself out in the end. The game is due for a change. Irons haven't really changed in 20 years, probably more. And then his play has been spotty, missed a whole bunch of cuts. But now, as you say, he just won a tournament and gets a two-year exemption. He and his clubs are going to be on display and in conversations for the next 2 years.
Yeah, he just missed eight straight cuts going into about 4 weeks ago. 4 weeks ago, he turned it around dramatically and has obviously been trending in the right direction the last 4 weeks. Those eight straight cuts came after he tried to change something. He started looking for a little more distance. He started swinging harder.
Hmm.
This is what golfers do. All golfers do this. They're always searching. They're always tinkering. They're always looking for five more yards. Five more yards. Just give me five more, and yet that usually leads to trouble. It has for Jordan Spieth over the last couple of years, and it happened to Bryson DeChambeau. He said, I just went back to what I was doing, and boom, I got locked back in again. That fast. It happened that fast. This is huge because the game's really hard. I mean, it's really hard. And if you don't practice every day, and really if you don't play every day, you haven't got much of a chance out there. I mean, you can kick it around a little bit. Maybe you get up and down, you score, whatever. But you're never going to really, you're never going to have a lot of success. Maybe enjoy it as much as you want to. This could change that. And he has been really heavily criticized. He's really stubborn. He's really arrogant. He comes off as though he knows something no one else knows, and it is incredibly annoying to a lot of people.
So he's the Tony La Russa of golf.
But what if he does know something?
What if he's onto it?
That nobody else knows.
Well,
every revolution starts with people saying, you're crazy, this isn't going to happen.
Well, that's what I'm thinking about, is what are the corollaries here around the history of sport, you know? Like, I'm thinking about when tennis rackets first started to go metal, right? And Jimmy Connors using what he was using in the 70s after everybody had been wood and only wood for so long. And then
hockey skates, the Tuke blades, when they came out, and then the graphite sticks.
The graphite sticks and the ability to bend them like that and stuff.
Every sport has had some huge... Now, look, your average guy on tour is not going to change. They got there doing what they've done. They're not going to change. They're not going to mess with what's worked for them and gotten them into the top 10 or top 100.
Right.
And just to be in the top 100 in the world golf rankings is a very big deal. Top 300 is a very big deal. Those guys are not going to change.
Uh-huh.
But
you?
There are but
hello, listeners, you? Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Maybe me. I mean, look, I don't have... I just don't have enough time. I mean, I break 80 once or twice a year. I kick it around. I get up and down. I'm creative around the greens. But I feel like I'm starting over. As much as I love it, I feel like I'm starting over every time I go back out.
Yeah, well, it's as much as you play.
And I did, but the problem is I don't play
enough.
I know, but as long
as you've played and as good, you know, as competent as you are to still have that feeling, no wonder you love the game. It's like baseball in that way. You're never going to get great enough.
It cannot be. I love how hard it is.
Yeah.
When I quit playing
hockey. It's supposed to be hard.
Thank you, Tom Hanks. When I quit playing hockey, I needed to find something. And I am passionate about it. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love that it's hard. I love that you have to work at it. And I love that nothing in that game comes easy. But there's just sometimes you wish that there was something you could repeat. That you could walk out there
and
maybe this is the answer.
I'm looking at a story on golfdigest.com right now. Do Bryson DeChambeau's single length irons make sense for your game? Is the article that I'm looking at right here. Because it's not obviously just the club, it's as you say, the swing. You gotta get the specific kind of swing. What fascinates me is even if the lie is an uphill lie or upright
lie. Oh, you mean the lie you're hitting from.
Yeah. That doesn't affect when the lie.
Well, all right,
does he choke up on a certain club if he needs to?
So, no. I haven't seen that. No, it seems to be the same grip at the same point on the club. Hey, look,
doesn't that strike you as like something that'd be really hard to adjust to? Like it would take a lot of work to change your swing like that.
But not if you're 10 years old and you're just starting out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I could do it because I think it's a feel game, especially around the greens. It's all about feel. I don't know that I could do it. I don't know that I could become that mechanical. But yeah. You watch him play, and it works for him. Yeah. And he had a fairway medal on 17 on Sunday. He off his drive into the rough, he needed to get on the green on a par 5 with a chance for birdie to catch Patrick Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
And on a terrible downhill lie. With seemingly no chance to make the green, he hit the shot of the tournament, hit a bullet right onto the front of the green, which gave him a putt for eagle. When both announcers said this is impossible, there's no way he makes the green from this lie with this swing, the way that he swings the club, and he did, and it was the same swing. I mean, he changed his stance, like he got down lower because the ball was below his feet. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't change his swing. He didn't change his swing plane. He never changes his swing plane. That's what we fight, is trying to stay on plane.
Understood. That's really interesting. Two things. Some people are saying that same size irons, single length irons, the concept has been around a long time. That existed for a long time before this. But
I'm sure everybody Googled it to try to dismiss what Bryson DeChambeau is doing.
Well, this is what he's had,
yeah.
And that they never used to sell. Right. Tommy Armour had him in the late 80s, early 90s. But, I mean, this is the kind of thing that he's getting. This is the response that
right.
he's getting.
Right.
But he's looked at the physics of it and believes in this completely.
Yeah.
Interesting. And the other thing is I want to expand the brains and let people text in if you can help me with some kind of equipment change like this that fundamentally changes a sport, any sport, and then transcends eventually to the amateurs and eventually into the game itself. Because, of course, the pros who think they know how to do it are not going to respond.
Yeah, I mean, they're millionaires and they've made a lot of money based on how they've done it. They're not about to switch at this point. But if you're just trying to figure it out,
mm-hmm.
it's not a terrible idea.
This segment was brought to you by Go-Go Squeeze. Things are so different today. Kids have turned down snack time trades because of Go-Go Squeeze. All natural, just 100% orchard, fresh apples, and other wholesome fruit. Kids love it, and so will yours. Go-Go Squeeze. It's Spiegs and Rosner on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is the Osley Brothers, but also used in Today Was a Good Day. And there's rumors possible. Do I say it? Do I not say it?
Don't say it.
All right. Jay Zawoski's
been
working.
You can say it.
Can I say it?
We expect to have Ice Cube in studio this week.
Come on, man. That's awesome. That's freaking awesome. I hope the hell that happens.
I think it will.
The Big Three is taking place on Sunday, not Saturday. Sunday at the UIC Pavilion. And
very disappointed.
Yeah.
Very disappointing.
And
I thought it was going to be today.
Jay Zawoski just jumped up and ran into the update studio. Why is that?
Because Kevin Zipak said some things.
Okay. And then Jay decided to leave the show. that were on.
Jay's gone.
He was on a microphone. I was like ready to engage with him, but he just. What did Kevin Zipak say that demanded you run in there and punch him in the face?
I almost said something. What else. Again? That's what he says when he's unimpressed with the guest I booked.
Well,
which is always.
Yeah, that's everything. He's unimpressed with everything. He mocks everything.
Yeah,
it's so good. It's because no one loves him.
Do you blame him?
No. For not loving him? Actually, I don't know. I don't know Kevin well enough to say whether he's undeserving of love for the entire human race.
I wouldn't waste your time trying to find out.
All right, I'm over it. This segment is brought to you by Taco Bell. Taco Bell's new double chalupa. Double chalupa. Why not have a double, Barry? Double chalupa now comes in a $5 box with a Doritos Locos Taco, crunchy taco, and a medium soda. But it won't be around forever, so love it while it lasts. Texters are bringing up some of the equipment changes. The axe bats in MLB. You see the axe handle bats? I wonder if that's going to make its way down into the lower levels of baseball. Mookie Betts, Dustin Pedroia, and I think Avisel Garcia. Right? Using an axe bat.
Everything usually works its way down eventually.
Mm-hmm. Hockey sticks, wood to composite when that happened.
It was wood to graphite, I think, and then wood to composite.
Okay. And then the curved hockey stick. When did people start?
That was Stan Mikita.
Manipulating the wood. It was Stan Mikita?
Stan Mikita did it. And,
yeah, I said manipulating the wood. Be an adult and keep doing radio.
Oh, man. Always Rick Camp. Rick Camp's always the guy.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Just give him a bus toss. He needs one a day.
Really underrated. Really underrated in terms of how childish he can be.
Coming from you.
Coming from me. Pot, kettle,
so Stan Mikita, tell me about Stan Mikita.
I think it was in like, I want to say it was 67, but it could have been before that.
Go ahead, man. Say it. If you want to say it. I don't want to stand in your way. You want to say
you
it was
67. You often do, though.
No.
You often do.
You want to
don't
say
pretend
it.
That you don't. He experimented with heating up the blade and being able to curve it. But the problem is he showed it to Bobby Hull. And Bobby Hull, who could shoot a puck over 100 miles an hour with a banana blade, so with a puck that was going all over the place, quickly became very dangerous and deadly for goaltenders. So they had to, at some point, stop that amount of curve and put a limit on how much you could curve a wooden blade.
Did that lead to the masks in some ways?
Bobby Hull was probably responsible for more masks than anybody else.
And the curvature of the stick.
It was Mikita who actually did it first.
Yeah, no, but I mean I think
curved or not, shooting the puck 100 miles an hour was pretty scary for goalies.
Yeah,
he wasn't afraid to shoot at your head. Big fan of that, by the way, shooting pucks at goalies' heads.
You're a big fan of it?
Oh, yeah.
You are,
especially early in a game. Yeah, first shift, shoot a puck at a goalie's head. Get him thinking, get him jumping, get him scared.
I want to
bang his head around, make sure his eyes are going in different directions.
I saw a documentary that has something I want to throw at you that I will do so in a few minutes in regards to that. And then Kendall Gill at the top of the hour on the Big Three and more.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Spiegel and Rosner here with you on 670 The Score. Texter's telling me, Barry, that the axe handle bats are indeed at the very low levels of baseball. Got a guy who runs an academy in suburban Chicago saying that they sell them. They've got some for kids to demo. I would say 90% of kids that try the axe handle bat love it. We've also heard from a bunch of umpires of lower levels of baseball who say they see them all over the place. So there's a big time revolution with some equipment that's happening right there.
Yeah, and I mean there's parts of games that go in cycles, and you see in baseball right now the desire to elevate the ball rather than get on top of the ball, which is what mostly everybody you've ever known has been taught their entire lives,
right.
Is to get on top of the baseball. And now you got to get, but that's a different sort of thing.
This texture says, obviously, big baller brand shoes will change the game for basketball. Excellent call. And then this one, the Patriots changed how much the football is inflated, went on to have very high passing completion percentages and extremely low fumble rates, thus became a dynasty by winning many Super Bowls. Thank you for that. All right, so you were talking about how you enjoy when a hockey player shoots a puck at a goalie's head.
I just think it's a good idea. I think it's just good practice. That's all. Shoot at a guy's head early in a game. Get him jumping a little bit. Mm-hmm. Get him thinking. Maybe rattle his brains. Hey, it's not against the rules.
Hey, it's
no
like,
one's. Although I wouldn't be surprised if they outlaw it.
I watched the documentary on the 1967 Red Sox, the Impossible Dream Red Sox. Mm-hmm. I shared some context on how great Carl Yastrzemski was that year. And when Hawk Harrelson joined them for like the final 25 games of the season and was there. But like he watched Carl Yastrzemski having one of the greatest seasons in the history of baseball.
Every time they needed a hit, he got a hit.
Right.
Every time they needed someone to save them, he saved them.
He hit like 523 over the last 2 weeks. He went 7-for-8 in the last two games of as they're in a pennant race. Just ridiculous. But the other thing that's in there is all the headhunting. My God. Like they all love Jim Lonborg because he would go after the best hitter on the opposition. He would throw at him, like, you know, he had our back. He set the tone. This was just the way that it was done.
Yeah.
And but it's like, oh my God, it's one thing to hit somebody in the butt, obviously, but in those days in baseball, you just threw right at the damn head. Yeah, brush him back by throwing directly at his head.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what happens to them is that Tony Conigliaro gets hit in the head by Jack Hamilton. His career and his life is essentially ruined, and they're all bemoaning that fact. It was very hard to have sympathy. Because I grew up like having heard about that and be like, oh, those poor Red Sox that year and they lost Tony C. How do you have sympathy when their guy's doing it to 10 people all year long?
Yeah, they weren't ashamed of throwing at guys' heads.
Everybody, all the teams around the league was just part of the game at the time.
Yeah, the antithesis of that is that if you go near anybody today, there may be warnings or they may throw you out or a guy may throw a fit. And as a left-handed pitcher, you better throw inside to a right-handed batter.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's not better. It's like for baseball to be what it's supposed to be, you got to be able to pitch inside and get somebody off the plate.
Yeah, if you can't get a guy off the plate, you can't use the outside corner. I mean, that's what every one of those Braves pitchers that were so good during that dominant two decades, they all used the inside corner in order to own the outside corner. If you can't do that, especially unless you throw 99, even then, I don't know. You're just not going to have a lot of success.
Yeah. So you got to find that balance in there. And I wish baseball could find that balance in there where people throw inside a little bit.
The problem is you got guys reacting today. If you come anywhere near them, they get up like you've just cursed out their mother. Mm-hmm. And all you did was throw inside. Not at them.
Right.
Just inside.
Right. Hey, even inside if you have enough control. But that's because of the long history and the decades and decades and decades, the generations, when you just threw right at a dude's head. It was like, hey, part of the game.
It's changed, though. During the 98 season, Oral Hershiser hit Sammy Sosa with like a 68-mile-an-hour breaking ball. And Sosa almost charged the mound. And Hershiser was laughing.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you're gotta be kidding me.
It's funny you referenced Sammy. Here's a text. Sammy Sosa got hit in the head and turned him pink.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.